thank you for coming back. We've got a good crowd. We appreciate that so much. We hope that you'll be able to come every night that we're going to gather. And I might say to you, if you could some way muster up the courage to every day, just every day, try to invite somebody to come. Just try to think before the day gets through, before services come, try to call somebody or write a letter to somebody or knock on a neighbor's door or maybe at the gas station or the Walmart. Just try to get somebody to come. I'm amazed in Madison. I've been there a long time. How many people have obeyed the gospel just simply because somebody kept inviting them to come? So you think about that, and maybe you can get somebody this week to come to the meeting. We looked in the sermon this morning at Matthew, the 7th chapter, and we saw that Matthew 7 is a defining message. It defines who can go to heaven. God tells us who can go. The issue is, who is doing the will of the Father? That's what defines who's going to heaven. It's not how you feel or what you think or how it looks or, you know, it's whether we're doing the Father's will or not. We know that it's a divisive message and that Jesus said there's only two groups of people. There are people who build on the rock and build on the sand, people who hear what he says and they say they're doing it, but they're not doing it. And so they're divided into two different groups, you see. That's what the Bible does. It divides people not into four or five or 10 or 20, but in two different groups. Either we're people who are doing what the Lord said or we're not. And we also saw that it is a drawing message. The Lord is demanding of us. He's commanding us to come into this narrow way. That means there's going to be a struggle. You're going to get frustrated and aggravated and wore out because you just keep saying, well, now, wait a minute. I thought we already fussed about that, you know. And just, it's not that we're fussing. We're just trying to figure it out. And so that's why we should be patient all the time. And be kind to each other and love each other while we study and try to figure this out together. I want you to turn this afternoon to the 10th chapter of the Gospel of John. And I'm just going to keep looking at issues where it seems like the picture seems to be the problem with why people have trouble just accepting the truth. There's a problem with that. And when we look at some of the pictures we see in the Bible, it becomes pretty clear as to why that problem or what that problem is. Now, in the 10th chapter of the Gospel of John, we really see that Jesus is going to tell us here who he is. He's going to tell us why he's come and what he's going to do. A lot of answers are given about who Jesus is, what his mission is, and what he's come to do. And so when we begin in this 10th chapter, you might remember in the 8th and 9th chapter, of course, the picture of Jesus saying the truth will make you free, and he has these witnesses, the Father, the Holy Spirit, his works and his words all testify. He has all these given testimony that he is the Son of God. Then the 9th chapter, this blind man is healed, and that creates a lot of trouble. But this blind man is determined and committed to what he knows he's not going to turn his back on. He just knows something. He doesn't know much, but he doesn't turn his back on what he knows, and that's what we need to hold on to sometimes. I say, well, I don't know the answer to everything, but there are some things I do know, and I'm going to hold on to those. And so you see, the blind man finally does that. And really, when you look at the 9th chapter of the Gospel of John, you really see at the end of that chapter where what we see is that Jesus, these Pharisees understood what Jesus was saying, and it bothered them. Listen to what's said in verse 39 of Matthew, of John chapter 9, verse 39. Jesus said, "For judgment I am come into the world, that they which see not might see, and that they which see might be made blind." And some of the Pharisees, when they were with him, heard these words. They said unto him, "Are we blind also?" And Jesus said unto them, "If ye were blind, ye should have no sin. But now ye say, we see, therefore your sin remains." Isn't that something? These people who thought they saw it, Jesus said, "You don't see it." And the people who were blind, they began to see it. And that says to me that I need to always tell myself I'm blind until I hear what the Lord says. I don't know a thing in the world. I don't know where to go, what to do, how to do it, or what the Lord likes until I realize it's not what I feel when I think, what does the Lord want and what does he want me to do? Now, that goes on, and it seems like the same crowd is still present in the 10th chapter when Jesus says to these people, it doesn't look like there's a break. They just put a chapter marker here, but truly, truly, or verily, verily, I say unto you, he that entereth in by the door into the sheepfold, he that entereth not in by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice. He calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, and for they know his voice. Now notice, Jesus here is painting a simple picture, and it's a picture of a porter opening a door for somebody, and the person who opens the door. Now, could that be John the Baptist, the one who came to prepare the way, telling people to get ready, Jesus coming? Could it be the prophets in the Old Testament for telling and showing that Jesus was coming, who he would be, what he would teach, how he would act, and all the things he would do? Well, I'm not sure exactly which one the porter is, but one thing we know, Jesus came in through the porter, the Old Testament, and what John the Baptist was teaching and telling about him, he came through that doorway. He said everybody else was thieves and robbers. Now you think about that. When you look at the Old Testament passages, there are a lot of them, where the prophets of old talked about the people of God. Jeremiah 23, verses 1 through 4 is a good example, where the shepherds, they scattered the people, they took advantage of them, didn't help them, they didn't feed them, and they were terrible leaders, and they were just stealing and robbing from the people. And so Jesus said, these ones who came before me, they were not the kind of leader I'm going to be, not the kind of shepherd I'm going to be. And so he says they were thieves and robbers, but the one who comes in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. And so now Jesus tells us, the one who comes in the way I've come in, I'm the shepherd. I've come in through the doorway. I've come in the right way. All the evidence, all things you can see about me demonstrate that I'm the one that was to come and to be the one who would come. And the porter opened the door for him. And notice it says in verse 3, to him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice. He calleth his own sheep by name and leadeth them out. Here's the picture of Jesus and a picture of animals and shepherds and sheep. And what's amazing about this picture, in our country, it's not sometimes this way, but in all Eastern cultures, the shepherds always lead their sheep. That's the way it is in those parts of the world. And I've seen this many times, and I've used this in illustrations preaching all over the world. I'll be in some other country, and we'll be in a big open area where there might be a bunch of sheep sitting over here at the edge and a bunch of people under a shade tree. And I'll say, whose sheep are those over there? And somebody will raise their hand and say, they're mine. I say, okay, I'm going to call your sheep to come over here to me. And so I say, moo sheep, moo sheep, moo sheep. And they just sit over. They don't even look up. I said, now you call your sheep over here. He goes, alababa, alababa. And here come those sheep. They come right over to him. They'll go up there, but wherever he is, he'll walk off and they'll go with him. You know, Jesus uses, or Isaiah uses this illustration in Isaiah, the first chapter, in verse 4, when he said, the ox knows his owner, and the donkey knows his master's crib, but my people don't know who they belong to. Isn't that something? Here we are, people. We ought to know where our master's barn is. We ought to know where who's feeding us, who owns us, who takes care of us. And when he calls us, we ought to follow him. Jesus said, that's the way this kingdom is. That's the way this shepherd is with his sheep. Jesus said, I've come, and I've come to call my sheep. And when I call my sheep, notice I call my sheep by name. Have you ever thought about the fact that Jesus knows your name? Have you ever thought about that? He knows your name. He said, when I call my sheep, I call them by name. He personally knows you. Now, that's kind of a marvel to me. Not many people know me at all, but to think that the Lord knows me is a great thing. And so he says, when I call my sheep, I call them by name. And when I call them, you know what my sheep do? Did you notice that he says there? Three things are said. He says, when I call the sheep, they hear my voice, and I call them by name, and I leadeth them out. So here's the people now that Jesus is calling and leading out. Simple illustration. Anybody living in the third world has seen this 1,000 times. My grandpa had cattle when I was a boy in the country, and I would go down there many times out in the field at the end of the day, and my grandpa would call those cattle in. They would be back on the back part of the farm, over a big lake in the back part of his farm, and he would go up there to the edge of the road, and he'd go, Sue Caffey, Sue Caffey. And you know, most cattle would get up, and they would just start coming on down to the barn. And he'd go in the barn and milk them and settle them down there in the barn. They'd stay down in there. And so every once in a while, he'd say, okay, he called me horsefly all the time. He said, I'm like a fly jumping around everywhere. He said, horsefly, you call them in. So I would try my best to have the same pitch of voice and say, Sue Caffey, Sue Caffey. And they wouldn't even look up. They just sat there. I'd do it 2 or 3 times. They would. I said, Grandpa, what is it? He said, the cattle know that I own them and I take care of them. I feed them and I watch out for them. And so they come to me because they know I own them, you see. So here's the picture of somebody who knows that the Lord owns them. If you know the Lord owns you, you know he's the shepherd. That means he's in charge. He's the provider. He's the protector. He's taking care of everything. When you hear his voice, what do? If you've got any sense at all, if you're smarter than animal, you will go to the one who is the shepherd, you see. So a common picture, everybody understands. And notice in verse 4, Jesus goes on to say, and when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and his sheep follow him, for they know his voice. This is another common thing in the third world. Sheep will get in a large area somewhere at nighttime, a lot of them together, and the men sometimes will get in an area where there's trees and rocks and things around, and those shepherds will sit at the doorway where they go when they went in there. Those shepherds become the doorway, and those sheep will mingle in there all together. And you'll think, how are they going to sort this out in the morning with all these different sheep in here? And it's a marvel. Each shepherd gets up and goes out and walks a little way, and he turns back and calls, and here comes his sheep. And none of the sheep that are not his come. Nobody worries. Those sheep have known. They pay attention to that. We ought to pay attention. When the shepherd calls, we know his voice, and we know when he calls, we ought to just follow him, and that's what animals do. If we're smart as animals, we'll be okay, you see. But notice in verse 5, when he says, a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of a stranger. And notice, these sheep know. They know when somebody strange is calling not to follow the strange voice. We need to learn the shepherd's voice so well and know it so, become so familiar that when somebody says something that the shepherd never, we say, wait a minute. Where did Jesus ever say that? Where did Jesus ever come up with those ideas? Where do we read that in the Bible, you see? People don't think like that. They just think, we've got a good idea, this is what we're going to do, and here we go, and the shepherd never calls us to come do it, but we go do it anyway. But now notice, he says then in verse 6, then notice what happens here now. This parable spake Jesus unto them, but they understood not what things they were which he spake unto them. Now, isn't that kind of an amazing, I don't know, we see this sometimes with your dog. You call your dog and he'll come to you. You know his name. He'll come to you. We understand that a little bit in our country. But living in a culture where everybody saw this every day, these men saw this every day. And when Jesus illustrated, it was so clear a child could figure it out. I said sometimes the book of Revelation is in pictures. And sometimes your children get it before you will because you're looking for some kind of puzzle when there's just pictures in the book, you know. Just need to figure out what the pictures are about. But here's a picture of Jesus giving this scene, and these highly skilled trained Pharisees who thought they really knew it couldn't figure out what a child could see every day. But now notice, that doesn't stop Jesus. He gave one illustration and didn't get that, so he gives them another one. Now look at the next one. In verse 7, then said Jesus unto them, verily, verily, or truly, truly, I say unto you, in other words, get this. If you couldn't get that, get this one now. You see, that's what that word truly, truly means. And so get this. He said unto them, I am the door of the sheep. All that came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. Now here's another picture now of Jesus being, he says, now I am literally the door. I'm the way for the sheep to come in and go out of the fold. And I've told these stories many times. I read years ago a lot of things about sheep. I was interested in this. So I read a story about a little boy in school. And the teacher said, Johnny, if you got 99 sheep in a fold, or I'm sorry, if you got 100 sheep in a fold, and one of them jumps out of the fold, how many have left? He said, zero. He said, Johnny, you don't know your math. He said, I might not, but you don't know sheep. When one goes, they all go. That's the way, you know. You notice how people are? When one person jumps, we all panic and jump. We just kind of do what everybody else does. We tend to do that. And so we need to think about the fact that's not the way. I read another story about a man who said he had a bunch of sheep in a fold, and he put a stick up where the gate was, just put a stick across there, and something spooked one of the bigger, older sheep, and he ran, and he went to jump, and he jumped to get over that stick. And when he jumped, he knocked the stick down, and he said, I sat there and watched every one of those sheep run out of the fold, and he said, you know what every one of them did? Every one of them jumped where the stick used to be. They saw somebody else do it, and that's what they did. People. It's what people do. We're the craziest things in the world. If somebody does something crazy, you ever notice styles? It just amazes me how people will do something stylish and it looks so crazy. You think, surely that won't go in there. You go, Nick, everybody's doing it. You know, it's amazing how people are. But it's a picture of people. And so Jesus tells them this story now. He said, I'm the door. And in verse 8, and all that came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. So he's saying, I'm gathering my sheep, and I'm the doorway for them to come in. And I'm the door, and if any man entered in, he shall be saved, number one, and shall go in and out, number two, and find pasture, number three. Now notice what that says about that. Jesus said, if you come in, if you come through me, what you're going to find out, you're going to find the entrance to come in, and you're going to find out how to be saved is what you're going to find out. You're going to find out what salvation is, what it means to really be safe from your sin and live with a life where you are saved from what you have done that is wrong. So you come in through Jesus, you're going to be saved, Jesus says. And he says, you're going to be able to come in and go out. Now think about that. You know, sometimes when you look at the Old Testament and the pictures in Galatians, the 4th chapter, and other places where the picture of the Old Testament, where the people were in some sense of the way, Galatians shows that they were like bond slaves in the Old Testament, but now we're sons. And we see how the freedom we're living under, the law of liberty today, we're free. And we can come in this building, go out of it. We can come and go and do as we please. God does not have some kind of chain and bars on us. We're not some kind of set in some slave condition where we have no rights whatsoever. Now, that's what we should think about. We don't really have any. But God's given us a lot of liberties and freedom and joy, happiness, to do all kind of great things. We can come in and go out. We're safe. Why? Because the shepherd is always watching. The shepherd is always protecting. He always knows. He's taking care of you. He's watching out for you. And so you can come and go as you please, and he will never leave you and never forsake you. Think about that. Somebody who loves you that much, and so Jesus says you can come in and you can go out, and finally he says you will find pasture. And you know what that means? You remember Jesus said that he's the bread of life, he's the living water, and if you drink this water, the 4th chapter, we may look at that one night. If you drink this water, you won't have to keep going back to that old well and drawing it over and over and over, because this water will satisfy you. The Bible will give you something. It will give you nourishment inside, and it will strengthen you and help you when you don't have food, you don't have sufficient clothing, you might be in some kind of great trouble. You can be satisfied because these words will feed the soul. And so it's a picture of Jesus telling us what he will do, what he will provide, and what we will get: salvation, security and protection, and even to be fed and to be satisfied. Now in verse 10, he keeps coming back to this. The thief cometh not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. I am come that they might have life and they might have it more abundantly. Now think about this. He said, let me tell you what I've really come to do. I've come not only to give you life, but I want you to have the full completeness, to know what it is to really live. You're not really living yet. You haven't really dawned on the day of eternity yet. You're going to one day, and I'm going to one day, I hope that 1 John 2, verse 20 says that we might be ashamed that when he comes, that is appearing. I don't want to be ashamed. I want to look at the Lord and know that I knew this was coming. I knew what he promised, and it's going to be something overwhelming, and I know that's what the Lord said. And so there's the picture of having a complete, full, abundant life. Not just to live here on the earth for a little while, but to live for eternity in a wonderful place, to live an abundant life. And so he says, I've come. And so what he says is, I'm going to give my life. Jesus said, I have chosen death so that you might have life. He chose death so I could live. That's what he did. And notice the next verse. In verse 12 he says, but he that is a hireling and doth not... And a harling, and not the shepherd, whose own sheep are not, seeth the wolf cometh and leaveth the sheep, he fleeth, and the wolf catcheth them and scattereth them and scattereth the sheep. Now here's a picture of Jesus telling what shepherds generally do. Most shepherds don't generally die for sheep. They'll try to protect them, but if it comes to their life, they'll flee away. But that's not the picture of this shepherd in the 23rd Psalm, in the 80th Psalm in verse 1. Some of those Old Testament Psalms was a picture of here's the God of eternity, who is the shepherd of his people. Our shepherd is an eternal God, and he has done everything. And his son came and gave his life so that we could live. Now, harlings, I've got a pickup truck, And it's beat up and banged up on every side and scratched up all inside because I call it my loaner. When somebody's moving, they call, Gary, could I borrow your truck? Sure. And I fill the gas tank up and they borrow it. They take off and they move it and bring it back and the tank's empty and it's scratched up somewhere, you know. And I loaned it to one fella and I had it for about a week sitting on my street there and I never went to the wall on the other side. And I didn't know he went down a fence row and tore the whole side of my truck up. Never even said a word to me about that. That was my loaner. See, he didn't care about that, you see. When somebody doesn't own something, when you have paid a great price for something and you own it, it means something dear to you and you are not going to let somebody abuse it or let somebody hurt it when you own it, you see. That's your owner. My truck is my loaner, not my owner. I mean, I own it, but I loan it, you know. But here's a picture where Jesus and what he does is different than what most shepherds do. He cares a great deal. And so he's not the hireling. When the wolf comes, he stays with it. You know. Shepherds don't run off when trouble comes. And sheep shouldn't either. Sheep should stay when trouble comes and work through it. But notice verse 13 says, the hireling fleeth because he is a hireling and careth not. See the difference? People who don't own it and haven't paid for it, they don't care. But Jesus has paid a great deal to be our shepherd and to be the door to go in through. Verse 14, I am the good shepherd. And know my sheep and have known of mine. And notice, he says, I know my sheep know me. And notice how well does he know his sheep and how well should we know him? Look at verse 15. As the Father knoweth me, even so I know the Father and lay down my life for the sheep. So he says, as I know you and you know me, that's how I know my Father. My Father knows me. You think about what that says about how well Jesus knows us, how intimate he is to know everything about our thoughts and our life and our trouble and our problems and all the things we suffer and struggle. He knows about that. He knows what's going on. Now, I don't know some of it, but he does. And so the Bible says in the next verse, notice again, he lays down his life for his friend. And notice how many times he says that. You remember up there in verse 11, I give my life for the sheep. Down there again now in verse 15, he lays down his life for the sheep. Look down there in verse 17 now. Therefore doth my Father love me because I lay down my life. I lay down my life. And notice, I take it again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down myself. I have power to lay it down. I have power to take it up again. This command have I received of my Father. And so here's this picture of Jesus laying down his life and being able to take his life back. And the Father gave him the command and the ability to do that. But now think about this. Jesus choosing death over life so that we can have an abundant life. And he offers us life over death so that we can overcome the very enemy that's going to destroy us. And what that means is that he loves us so much. And he's such a great shepherd and such a great doorway to go into this place of safety and security that we don't have to. I said this morning, sometimes I feel like I depress people when I talk to them about making sure we're doing it right. But if we're listening to the shepherd's voice, we're following him, and he's saving us, protecting us, and feeding us, we need to see that no matter what happens, we are very valuable. Because would he have given his life for us if he thought they can't do it and they're not going to make it? Would he have done that? Would he have thrown himself away if he thought, you can't do it, there's no way, it's too high, too hard for you, you can't do it? No, he made it possible. He expended himself. He would have never come and done what he did if we couldn't do it. We can do it. And the great thing is we know we can do it because of what he did for us. And I love to tell this, a lot of these things I tell everywhere I go. And so if you've been somewhere else, you might have heard this before. But you remember when President Reagan was inaugurated back in 1980? And it was in the wintertime and an airplane slid off the runway in Washington and flew and landed in the Potomac River and started sinking in the Potomac River in those icy waters. Some of you older people might remember. It was on the news. And they had helicopters zooming over and dropping these cables down trying to pull people up out of the water. And because the wind was so strong, they would drop this thing down and it would blow away from the person that was trying to catch it and they couldn't reach it. And there was one young man. He must have been in awful good shape. But he swam over and got a hold of that cable, caught a hold of it, and took it over, and he hooked it onto a lady, and he let her go, and he took her up. And then they watched her, then they dropped down again, he swam again, he got this down, he took it over and hooked it onto a young girl. There was a young girl in the water. He hooked it on her, and they took her up. And then he dropped it down one more time, and hooked it on a gentleman that was of age, we'll say. And he hooked it onto this older fella, and it took him up. And then the camera zoomed in, and this fella, you could see hypothermia hit him, and he just got stiff, and he started sinking in the water, and he sank down. And the news people went crazy. They said, what in the world was he thinking about? What crazy person would do something like, what was wrong with that man? And finally, they got somebody on the phone and said, I know what was wrong with him. And they said, what was wrong with him? He said, that man loved the lives of other people more than he loved his own. Can you see what Jesus is trying to tell us? He loved our life more than he loved his own. Don't you want to surrender to him tonight? Obey the gospel. If you're not committed, won't you come tonight and make yourself committed to him? This is the good shepherd. He's the door. You can come to him tonight while we stand and sing. Won't you come?